Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
On the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Justin Cuthbert filling in with me this morning. Texan 590 590. We're doing new Leafs goal songs because Austin Matthews is open to the idea.
And I think you got the right genre.
Yeah, this is
the success
right here,
right? Of Blink 182 lit in with the Colorado Avalanche this year. This type of stuff that
everybody loves. It
you can sing along. Mm-hmm. Universally loved. If you try to get too cute, it might blow up in your face.
The text line agrees. This is the genre. My Billy Talent fans in the text line, mm-hmm. They're awake. They know.
This is their hour.
This is the Billy Talent hour. The Blue Jays don't have, you know what the Blue Jays don't have is a win song. You know what I mean? Like, they just, I never thought about that. Every team has
they used to do all we can do is, all we do is win, win, win.
Really?
And like, whenever that's played, it's just the worst. Like,
I don't remember the worst.
Maybe it was a long time ago. Hmm. I remember that. I was just like, oh, get me out of this ballpark right now.
The Blue Jays, like baseball in general, get the fun. Everybody gets their own song. Somebody in the text line did recommend that each player should get their own goal song. That doesn't help our question about...
There are teams doing that, I think.
Really? That's so much effort.
I think San Jose experimented with that. There it is. The song that makes me cringe.
I hate it. Well, all the Blue Jays do lately is win series.
Well done.
We're trying. Ben Shulman, co-host of Locked On Blue Jays podcast, joins us this morning. Ben, you're on play-by-play this weekend for us on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, filling in. How was the weekend?
Hey, guys. The weekend was great. It was a lot of fun. The Blue Jays treated us to some really entertaining games, and it was a great atmosphere, you know, 40,000 just about or above every night. So it was a really fun series.
Starting to feel like playoff atmosphere. I was there Friday night. A bullpen win, Kikuchi win for me on Friday night. Shock and awe. Had an amazing time. But did it feel like the playoff stakes had already kind of elevated the atmosphere with the 3 days that you were calling?
Yeah, I think so. I think you can tell that the fans and the ballpark is buzzing a little bit like that, knowing the importance of each and every win, each and every hit, even. And there were, especially in game one, you know, the game where all five scoring plays happened to be home runs, there were a lot of game swinging clutch hits and guys coming up in big spots, especially Matt Chapman. So, it definitely is starting to feel like a playoff atmosphere with the feeling in the building and also the way that, you know, Brandon Hyde and John Schneider were using their teams this week, which was, you know, pushing some pitchers and gambling and really seeing if they could go all out to pick up some wins.
What are the signs, Ben, for you that the Blue Jays are sort of rounding into that playoff mode and, trying to peak at the right time? Are there things that you're seeing that give you confidence that this team is sort of peaking at the right time and might be able to, you know, take their game even to that next level as we gear up for the postseason here? And hopefully they have some success there.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things, but a main one is that when the team is scoring early, they had been getting scored on first a lot during some stretches where they were a little bit up and down, but during this series, you know, even though they went 2 out of 3, they scored first in all 3 games. That traditionally means that they're going to have consistent offense throughout because they've had no trouble scoring off bullpens, just occasionally been shut down by starters this year. So when they can pick up some hits early, populate the bases, and not get a run, you know, first 3 innings preferably, then it's usually going to be a pretty good day for the bats. And when the bats are good, then the team's usually good.
Ben, the Blue Jays have the best record in MLB in September, which when you say it out loud, it's a little bit surprising since it felt like every other team was peaking also at the right time. But the Blue Jays are certainly doing what they need to do in September baseball. How much of the starting rotation has been a factor for that in your perspective? And is that still going to be that X factor to see how long they make it in the postseason?
Yeah, they've been a huge factor. They have been really, really good recently. Ron Stripling has obviously taken his game to a complete other level than it's really ever been at before. Alec Manoa, even in the loss in the series finale this weekend, put out another really impressive performance. He continues to be one of the best in the American League. Jose Barrios had a good start in game two of the series. He's really starting to put it together at the right time. That's going to be huge for the playoffs. Starting pitching, I think, is a massive factor. And traditionally, you know, teams are going to have really, really strong starting pitching in the playoffs. And the one team that ends up letting up a blow-up game, that can end up costing them the series. So I think it's immensely important that they at least get put in a position to win. And when the offense is, you know, kicking it into high gear like it has been somewhat recently, then when you get even average starting pitching, the team is going to be really good. So they need the pitchers to be at a minimum consistent, but it would be great if they continue to be dominant like they have been recently.
We're going to reconnect with Ben. He's on a little bit digitized, a little staticky.
A little underwater.
But the point about the starting pitching has been, I think, what we're going to see down the stretch, and also Blair and Barker, they love to drive this narrative home too, is that you're going to be led as deep as you can go with these 3/4 pitchers, which is a good problem to have, because mm-hmm. the conversation about who's going to be maybe third in line, Barrios or Stripling, is a conundrum right now. But what a great problem to have. If you have 3 pitchers that you feel confident with, maybe Stripling can be a guy that fills in half of a game, or it's like as a 1A, 1B in terms of the third start.
Well, it's funny because, you know, September call-ups, you get a bigger bench in the postseason. But I think shortening the bench is something, you know, something we see in hockey, something we see in other sports, mm-hmm. basketball as well, where it helps a team, where it's like, okay, we're going to cut our rotation down. We're going to use less to get more out of it. And I feel like that's something that the Blue Jays can do. If they shorten things up, they're in a beneficial scenario when they're going to only have to start 3 pitchers in a wild card series. And of course, that will, you know, help their bullpen, but winning a bullpen game on Friday night, pretty, pretty important, maybe a little bit surprising, but a good sign, Ben, when you're jumping back on us with us here, a good sign that their bullpen, in terms of the depth, that a bullpen can hold up on Friday night and get them a big win.
Yeah, I mean, they used 7 relievers in that game. 6 of them had scoreless outings, and the bullpen as important as the starters, if not more, going into the playoffs. Last season, the Atlanta Braves and former Blue Jays GM Alex Anthopoulos won a world championship mostly based upon the fact that if they had a lead in the 5th inning, they weren't going to cough it up. So the more you can get out of the bullpen, which at times has been the strongest unit, of the 3 in terms of bats, starters, and bullpen, they've been really, really good at times this year. If they're hot at the right time, then the Blue Jays just need some clutch hitting to make sure that they can lock up some easy wins in the playoffs.
Now, they did cough it up. Jordan Romano coughed it up on Sunday, just his 5th blown save of the season, first since, I believe, August 7th. So it's been a very good run for Romano, but he was hit pretty good yesterday by the Orioles. Just a blip, something to be maybe concerned of in the future, or do we have to wait until this becomes a pattern to be worried about, Romano's form going into more important games down the stretch of the season and, of course, into the playoffs?
I would say wait for a pattern. I leave it. This is more of just a small blip on the radar than anything else. Like you had said, it's been over a month since he'd blown a save. He's been one of the most sure-handed closers in not just the American League, but all of baseball. So I'm not too worried about it. You know, the Orioles have a lot of young guys that have, you know, fewer than 50 or fewer than 100 at-bats at the major league level, and they threw some pinch hitters in there, and they're a good team that just ended up, you know, stringing together a rally at the right time. So I'm not too worried about him in the long term. I think the Blue Jays are in really good shape with Jordan closing games.
I like that level-headedness. I totally agree that Jordan Romano had a little blip, not a big deal in terms of stringing together some starts and some consistency. The Blue Jays have doing just that. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. as well, with the longest hitting streak in the AL. I think it's been quiet because we haven't seen the powerful MVP Vlad that we have seen in previously last year, but having that stat alone and him being able to get a home run yesterday and go for 2 for 3, are you seeing the turnaround the corner that we're looking for with Vladdy?
Yeah, he was elevating some pitches and really punishing, you know, pitchers for following a game plan a little too stringently yesterday. You know, this whole year he's been pitched low a ton with a lot of breaking balls, and they've forced some ground balls because of that. But yesterday, both of his hits, they were trying to pound the same area of the zone 3 times in a row, and on the third one, he burned them once for a double and once for a home run. You know, he's not going to magically repair some of his numbers into what he had last year, because, you know, last year was a wild year, and it's a little bit different of a year for the entire league. But he's looking pretty good down the stretch. He's consistently populating the base paths for Bo Bichette and Matt Chapman or whoever's behind him. So I think he's still doing really well. And, you know, even some of his down years are up years for a lot of other people. So he's still been really important and their best hitter, and probably will be their best hitter going into the playoffs.
Blue Jays would be in a better spot if it was the sweep, if they were able to hold on and take 3 from the Orioles in terms of, like, you know, guaranteeing them a spot in the postseason, obviously. But I think we can kind of put to bed that discussion about making or not making the postseason. Just a couple weeks left here, and they're, you know, in a very, very good spot in the wild card chase. But do you think it helps them in terms of, like, the motivational aspect of late season competition? I find that if you don't have much to play for down the stretch, that it doesn't put you in an advantageous position. But the Jays have some carrots, some incentives to chase here, with the Yankees being, I think, 5.5 up, and of course trying to get home field for the playoffs. Do you think the Blue Jays are in a pretty good spot from an incentive standpoint to make the best of the last couple weeks of the season?
For sure. There's still a ton to play for, especially with that wild card seeding. The division, there is a chance, but, you know, the Yankees winning on Sunday and the Blue Jays losing has hurt the Blue Jays' chances a lot, considering the limited number of games left and the fact that the Yankees' schedule isn't all that difficult. But the seeding is massive. Currently, the Blue Jays would be set to play all 3 games of the first round at home. But you're half a game, if you're the Blue Jays, from slipping into playing on the road all 3 of those. And the 6th seed or the 3rd wild card, you know, that has its different pluses and minuses with playing the AL Central, but also having to play on the road as well. So I think definitely they are highly motivated right now to continue to win games. They want to play at home, I have to believe, and want to be able to, you know, if you play at home in that first series and you win, your second round is the Yankees. If you end up being the 3rd wild card, even if you say the AL Central opponent is the easiest and you beat them, then you got to go play the Astros, who seem to be quite clearly the best team in the American League. So I think they have a ton to play for to try and stick around in this top wild card spot. And that really culminates pretty soon this week with the series versus the Rays, with the Jays currently owning just a half game lead on the Rays. They can do a lot of good if they can win the series, a 4-game set in St. Petersburg, take control of the tiebreaker against the Rays, and expand their lead.
One of the most important things for success, I believe, down the stretch has been making sure the players are healthy and playing consistently. George Springer is a guy that is able to grind it out. No elbows, no problem. What is the status with Lourdes Gurriel? You know, I saw him doing some stuff at the Rogers Center this weekend. Any idea of if there's a status update or a promise that he might be back in the lineup soon?
It seemed like they were pretty optimistic from what John Schneider had been talking about before games about Lourdes being back sooner rather than later. There was some mention of the fact that while Sunday, you know, this is prior to Sunday, seemed like a little bit far-fetched, that following the off day, so coming up tomorrow, that there was a better chance he is eligible to come off the injured list. He was doing baseball activities, but at the point that we were seeing them warm up, which wasn't as much on Sunday because, you know, day game after an afternoon game of sorts, I didn't see him doing any running personally, but he was swinging, he was throwing. I think, a very good chance that if not in Philadelphia, which is only a 2-game set, that in Tampa, Lourdes is back and playing with the team again.
It feels like a little snack to tide us over until postseason play, when we can dive into that and likely a wild card series. But it feels like the Bo, Vladdy, Manoah extension talk is going to be prevalent here down the stretch of the season. In a perfect world, Ben, but a realistic world, how does this all shake down? Like, what should the Blue Jays prioritize, you know, getting done sooner than later? And maybe who should they wait on? What? How does this work out the best in their favor? If they could draw it up, how would it go?
I think it works out the best if they end up extending everyone eventually. In my opinion, all three of those guys are more than worthy of being locked up to be with the Blue Jays in the long term. And I would be especially aggressive, I mean, with all of them, but with Alek Manoah, who really looks like a can't miss at this point. I mean, there was this really hot streak from Bo. Before that, some people, had mentioned he was having a down year. Vlad, we just talked about, while he's still having a phenomenal year, the numbers are a bit different from last year. Manoah has been the exact same guy for a limited time, albeit, but for a year and a half, he has been Alek Manoah and looks like one of the next great starting pitchers in this league. So I think you want to lock up Manoah, but I'd be pretty aggressive. You know, Vladdy wants a deal this offseason. It's interesting because you have to figure out the price point with the fact that he nearly won the MVP last year. He has not been that type of player this year. So are you paying him for MVP Vlad? Are you paying him for this Vlad? Somewhere in the middle, that will be something for, you know, people smarter than I. And Bo Bichette, I mean, you might be buying in a little bit at a high point in value with the fact that he has played so well in the later stages of the season, but at the same time, you know, he's just putting up yet another really good offensive season, and he's done it now in limited samples for 4 years in a row. So I would lock up all of them to deals that they like, that can keep them here long-term, because that's the best chance, I think, at putting together a contender for a really long time.
Sounds like an easy plan. Lock them all up for as much money as they want.
Expensive offseason.
Yeah.
Just make them all happy. Ben, where does Ross Stripling play into any of this? If, you know, he's a free agent, he's played himself into probably a pretty good payday. Think that's a target, an attainable goal? And should they be aggressively doing that right now?
Yeah, I think it's possible. I would be a bit worried about an upstart team with a little bit less money on their payroll, who, you know, needs a pitcher a bit more, paying Ross a good chunk of money to go in and fit in near the top of their rotation. He's just been that good. He has earned himself a very nice payday, I think, when he gets free agency coming up. So I think it's possible for the Blue Jays. It'll be interesting to see if they shift different assets in the offseason and how everything works out right now, because with Ross, you know, if they re-sign him, they kind of have signed six starters, with the fact that Kikuchi is on a starter's contract, and Hyunjin Ryu still is on the books for the team for one more year, so they'd have to figure some stuff out. And they are not paying anyone cheap, really, other than Alek Manoah right now, because he's a rookie. So it'll be interesting. They have a shot, but I am a bit worried, if I'm on the Blue Jays side, I think, that someone comes and poaches Ross by paying him at a rate that the Blue Jays maybe just can't really do with their payroll situation.
Maybe if they give him the third starter position in the postseason, he likes it here more. He wants to stay. He takes a little bit of a discount.
A loyalty move.
Loyalty. Hey, we're going to rewrite the narrative here, Ben. Maybe we'll help lock him in. Appreciate you joining us this morning. Great work this weekend for us. I'm filling in for Ben Wagner.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you having me.
That was Ben Shulman, co-host of Locked On Blue Jays podcast, was filling in on play-by-play this weekend. Sportsnet 590 The Fan for Ben Wagner. He's got a very familiar timbre to his voice, does he not?
That was the Shulman weekend.
It was. Good for them. Well, we're lucky, spoiled for the Shulmans. But Blue Jays' day off tonight, which is lovely. And then they got a two-game little baby series against the Phillies. Then Rays this upcoming weekend, another important one. And then they're back for their final week of home action, Yankees and Red Sox. What a way to close it out.
Mm-hmm.
The Rogers Center. It'll be jam-packed, I assume.
We've obviously been talking a lot about these contracts.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a chance that, you know, maybe the three richest contracts in Blue Jays history are signed. And, you know, if Ben Ooh. Has it the way he wants it, it's going to have to be that way. Because right now, George Springer's six-year 150. That's the richest ever. I mean, and we're talking about these three players. I don't know exactly how Manoa's will shake out because, of course, you know, the Blue Jays have some leverage there. But Bo and Vladdy are not settling for anything less.
No.
So we could talk about a rewritten history of richest Blue Jays contracts with the handling of these three players. Again, I don't know exactly how it's going to go. Yeah, it sounds great. Hey, let's sign them all. I'm down with that. I just don't know how they're going to pull it off. I don't know when. I don't know when the right time is for each of them. They're all their own individual case. But right now it's Springer, then Berríos, then Vernon Wells, Kevin Gausman on that list. So it could be almost exclusively active Jays.
Wow.
Although
I think it would be.
Vernon Wells would stick around, I think, given that he made a little bit more money over a seven-year term than Gausman over 5 years. But as it should be, you know, the dynamics changes in terms of the financials. This could be a very expensive Blue Jays team very, very soon.
Goodness. Good thing Rogers has the ability to make that happen.
Definitely do.
So.
They definitely do.
Go get them. It's time for something to chew on. Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Whew. Could we be seeing the end of a Canadian icon and legend in Sidney Crosby? Don't get emotional, everybody. But Sidney Crosby will not play hockey forever. And that is very difficult to stomach at 7:25 in the morning. But here's a clip on, once again, 32 Thoughts of Podcast. Really getting pushed here today on the Fan Morning Show. But they've been killing it. They got to sit down with Crosby and they asked about what's the future look like for you. And it's kind of sad.
Have you given any indication as to how long? Like, you know, you got 3 years left. Mm-hmm. You just turned 35. Mm-hmm. Have you said?
Wait, are you going to go 36 there?
I was told there'd be no. I was told there'd be no math when I went into. No, 87. Yeah. That's the one. I remember. But just like, I've wondered. Like, I'm watching Chara this past year, and I know how much you love hockey.
Yeah.
And I've wondered, like, could we see you out there till you're 45 years old?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't want to say no, but I would lean towards that not being the case. I'm thinking about 3 more years and then seeing what happens from there. Like, I know it doesn't do me any good to look past that, but I know that I want to continue to play at a high level. And, you know, I played a lot of hockey. You know, it's something that takes a lot of effort. You got to be invested and your body has to hold up. There's a lot of things that you need to go right to continue to play, you know, at an older age. So, yeah, I think that 3 years is my focus. And then from there, I'll just kind of see where I'm at.
How does that make you feel?
I'm not emotionally prepared for.
I know.
I don't even think I was emotionally prepared
for
that.
No, God, please, no, no.
But a Sidney Crosby-less NHL just doesn't speak to me. Tell you that much. Yeah, I mean, he seems very, like, that seemed decisive, but I think it's only 3 years. Like, 3 years are safe, obviously.
Yes.
He's going to play, like, that's on his mind. He wants to be the best he can over that. And then I think you, at that point, you know, reassess where you are. And if he's still a dominant player, I'm sure he will continue to play. But if he doesn't seem like the guy who wants to take on the Jason Spezza role,
no.
Perhaps, where you're just grinding on a fourth line, not to say Sidney Crosby will be a fourth liner in 4 years. But I just don't, I don't think, and he's accomplished too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it'll burn that way for him, but I don't expect it to just be 3 years and over. I think he just wants to see where he's at in 3 years, or at least that's what I'm telling myself.
How much do you think depends on how good the Pittsburgh Penguins are as well? Like, do you think there's a chance Sidney Crosby can win another Stanley Cup?
I mean, that's the thing. The Penguins are a fascinating offseason study because new ownership, and that ownership was apparently very, very aggressive in turning over previous rosters and organizations that they have under their label. So I was expecting Pittsburgh to go through this huge change. No more Malkin, no more Letang, and yet they doubled down on their existing core. And that existing core in the recent seasons hasn't been good enough. I mean, they've been competitive, but they haven't won a playoff series in a long time. I mean, I think dating back past the bubble, not getting into the playoffs, like, it's been a while since the Pittsburgh Penguins have had any success in the postseason, but they should have beat the New York Rangers, and, you know, they lost their netminder, and things sort of fell apart on them. I still think they're a highly competitive team, and I think they'll remain a highly competitive team, mm-hmm. but they might be at their best when Crosby's making less money in 4 years. Maybe they can turn over the roster a little bit and have a better team. But they've emptied the cupboards, and they don't have much there. And Ron Hextall's job was to try and, like, look to the future a little bit by while maintaining what they had. And I don't know if they've done much of the first objective. I think they've mainly just maintained what they have. And I don't know if that's enough anymore, especially when you look at Colorado and Edmonton and Toronto, elite teams that, you know, have risen the bar a little bit past maybe what Pittsburgh can reach.
What about a Sidney Crosby future where he does what Patrice Bergeron just did, 1 year contract?
I would love that.
Cheap as hell.
I don't want him to play anywhere else. Do you want him to play anywhere else?
No, he will never play. He will never play anywhere else. Never. I don't even if the Maple Leafs were a possibility.
I think we'd be all right.
But a Patrice Bergeron, you know, I'm in the end of my career-esque time. Mm-hmm. I am still a contributor to this team. I can take some of a pay cut to help make this happen. I'm a part of this leadership. I'm part of this core. This team is in a window that isn't as defined as some other teams. What he just did in the postseason, and didn't they have somebody else do the same thing? Like, that's a really good pathway to follow, maybe, if you're Sidney Crosby.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best way to get the best out of your last years is to work on a cheaper deal, obviously, and let others earn money so that you're surrounded by talent. But here's one more consideration when looking at Sidney Crosby, or the rest of the road that Sidney Crosby has left to travel. One more Olympics, 2026.
If they let them go.
He's currently, his contract expired 2023, 24, 25. So that means he's got to play one more year to get to the 2026 Olympics.
I need to see him one more time.
If he's on that Patrice Bergeron deal, the sweetheart deal for the 25-26 season, plays in the Olympics, maybe that's his farewell.
Wins gold.
I need to see, and I'm not World Cup of hockey, whatever. I will watch it. I'll be interested. It'll be great, but it won't be the Olympics. I need to see mm-hmm. an Olympic Games with Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby on the same team. It's got to happen.
Well, I think you just laid out a perfect script.
And maybe Sid has that in his mind as well.
I think he might. One last thing on Sid. He might be getting up there in age, as he jokingly mentioned, but he still knows how to party, because Nathan MacKinnon had his Stanley Cup party this past summer, and, you know, obviously he's attended a lot of Crosby's. Apparently, quote, Crosby was at least the top five drunkest there. He said, MacKinnon left 2 hours before I did. I think I shut down that ale house last night.
I mean,
that's
his job. That's his job. You have to do what others did for you, and I think MacKinnon was probably enjoying Sidney Crosby's championships as well, so you got to pay it back.
I love it. He's still got the vibrancy of a young pup.
He's still young. Come on.
He's still young. Let's take a break. We're going to talk to David Sampson after the break about the Blue Jays contract conundrum, how they're going to make it work, and if the division's still attainable. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Morning show. It's Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Justin Cuthbert filling in today alongside me, Ailish Forfar. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, at our names. And as always, download and subscribe to the Fan Morning Show podcast. We're 3 hours now. One less hour of work for me, because the debut of the J.D. Bunkus podcast post-show today at 9 a.m. Always stay tuned to listen to that. Our next guest, we're going to need some financial advice from how to make all this work. We're not, you know, I'd say proudly to admit an analyst in terms of contracts.
No,
I don't know how it works.
Not quite.
David Sampson, former MLB executive, current CBS Sports analyst and host of the Nothing Personal podcast, joins us this morning. Good morning, David.
Good morning. How are you?
We're well. How do you make all this money work? If you're the Toronto Blue Jays, you got three or four pending contracts that are going to be worth a hell of a lot of money. Where do you even begin to start?
So what you do when you're in the front office, you look at your players and you figure out who's going to be better on a long-term deal versus who's going to want to be incentivized and go year to year. That's really the first question you ask, because you don't want to sign a player who then gets lazy or gets happy that they have all the guaranteed money and then they're not bringing it. So what we do is we use our sports psychologist, we use our own eyes, and we look at our payroll, not just this year, but going out a few years as we figure out the constitution of the team. The Blue Jays are an interesting situation because they have a very high payroll. It's not the number one or number two payroll, but they certainly do spend money. And the question is, how do you allocate it? And you know they've signed great free agents over the years at pitching, but they've got all these position players. And I've been talking to you guys for years about it. When do you go long with Guerrero? When do you go long with Bichette? And I just don't think it's yet. If I were running the Blue Jays, I'm going year to year with these guys, and I'm going to keep them hungry.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with you, David. I think if the Blue Jays have anything right now that's in their advantage, it's that they have three more arbitration seasons with both Guerrero and Bo. But it comes to a point where, you know, they get unhappy with that and they might have to move on something. Which one makes more sense if you're going to not have the opportunity to wait, if your feet are held to the fire when it comes to Vlad and Bo? You know, which one makes more sense for a extension in the immediate or near term?
I just want to push back a little bit, because you can never let your players hold your feet to the fire. And I did over 18 years. There were times when I felt such pressure to make an offer to a player who was entering arbitration because our owner wanted cost certainty. And that's all you get when you sign. You've got Guerrero and Bichette for three more years. They do have a three-year contract right now. You just don't know what they're going to be paid. When you sign young players to deals, it's really just for cost certainty. So you can put a number in your budget, show it to your owner or your corporate owners and say, look, this is what this player is definitely going to cost no matter what. And players want the guarantee because it protects them against any sort of injury or downside performance, because arbitration is based on your previous year's performance in large part, which is called your platform year. So I never let a player push me, at least not often. As far as which player, I look at Guerrero, and I know him when he was a kid. I know his father. This is a generational talent, and that word gets thrown around way too much in baseball and in life, but he's that good. On the other hand, I just don't know if he is going to sign for free agent money less than, let's say, $30 million per year in the free agent years. And as I look at the makeup of my team, I'm just not prepared to pay Vladimir $30 to $30+ million 4 years from now. Not yet. Let's make sure he earns that $30 to $35 million by performing again for three more years. So if you're asking me to choose one, I would choose Bichette, because I don't believe that he will require, nor should he get, those kind of numbers in the free agent years. But with Guerrero's power and his background, knowing what kind of player he thinks he is, I think that he's going to want a number that the Blue Jays will not be comfortable with.
And the other benefit of waiting is you get to wait, but you get to compete too. You get to have two really, really good players performing at under what their market value would suggest. And you can allocate that money elsewhere and maybe keep a Ross Stripling around or replace Stripling or another pitcher with, you know, a similar sort of deal. So I think the most incentive from a team building perspective is just keeping this team really competitive over the next couple of years if you can wait on paying both Vlad and Bo.
Well, keep in mind, when you sign a long-term deal with an arbitration player, it feels like it's backloaded when you look at how it's paid, but it's not. It's just giving the players what their arbitration number would be, which is not $30 or $35 million. That's a free agent number. So if you sign Vladimir to a six-year deal, he's going to get $10 million. Then okay. 15, then 20, then let's say 35 each year in the free agent years that you buy out. So you're not really changing your payroll over the next few years. You're just guaranteeing what it'll be. And in terms of the window for the Blue Jays, they're just sort of in the upper I'm going to say lower upper class. So they have an ability to have a competitive window open longer than some teams, but not as long as others like the Dodgers and Yankees. And I think when you look at the Blue Jays roster, they're in the middle of a window, not toward the end by any stretch. I don't think they're in the beginning of the window because their young players are getting more expensive. The beginning of a window is when you're getting great performance out of a Guerrero before he's even reached arbitration. That's called the beginning of a window. When they're making arbitration, you're in the middle toward the end of a window. When they get to free agency, your window's over. That's how most teams, actually 28 teams, look at competitive windows.
So somebody that falls in the same similar conversation would be Alek Manoah, who's hitting that stride really on early on in his career, and I think he's in team control till 2027 at least. How does this start to maybe affect or materialize what might happen when you're considering the other young talents on this team and trying to keep Alek Manoah extended throughout the future?
Let's try to think of the long-term deals that have worked for pitchers. I mean, it may take us to the next segment, but let's try to think. I mean, we have Justin Verlander signed a good long-term deal. Max Scherzer had a good long-term deal. Hold on, let me think. Anyone else? Anyone else that you can think of? No, I can't really think of any. So, right? I mean, listen, you have him under control. There's no reason to sign pitchers. And I've done it, and it just doesn't work because pitchers tend to get hurt way more often than position players. They tend to lose performance, lose velocity. Something bad happens. So I've never been afraid to go year to year and just keep churning. And you can choose one pitcher if you want, but it's not like the Blue Jays haven't signed pitchers to long-term deals. They have. And at some point, you just have to stop. I don't see them signing Manoah long-term. It does not make sense. They've got him long-term, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Is there a comparable for Manoah in terms of, you know, what Manoah might want? There's obviously the team, it behooves them to wait. But if you're Alek Manoah and you want to get paid and you're pushing for it right now, is there a comparable around the league that would sort of, you know, maybe he could mirror that if, you know, he gets what he wants?
So it used to be that if you signed a young player to a long-term deal and bought out some free agent years, that you'd get a discount. Right? They would say, listen, for guaranteeing this money, thank you so much. I will take lower than what I think I deserve in free agency because you're guaranteeing me these arbitration years. Those days are over for whatever reason. All these young players who are signing, and people can talk about the Atlanta Braves and what a great job they've done getting their young guys signed. At the end of the day, when you do the math on these deals that are signed with really young players, you're in danger because you're paying them as though they have performed at the highest level each year of their pre-arb and then arbitration years. So for a pitcher, and I've sat with pitchers before, and they've said, I want to be paid like Kershaw as a free agent because I'm as good as Kershaw. And the answer is, well, no, you're not, because he's done it for way more years than you have. So what Manoah does is he goes around and looks at pitchers, and he's comparing himself to free agents. He's comparing himself to veteran pitchers who have a bulk of performance, have performed for so many years. And we would go to Manoah and say, listen, you haven't done anything yet. Like, you're just starting. So as a free agent, we think you'd be, you know, we'll give you $15 or $18 or $20 million maybe at most. And I think Manoah would just say no to that. Therefore, it's not even worth starting the conversation.
For that reason, is he not really involved in the discussion when considering the long-term future and the financial dynamic even 3-4 years down the line? Like, it's really hard to separate Bo and Vlad. Like, it seems like they're sort of moving in lockstep, and maybe at a certain point you're going to have to choose between the two of them if you want to pay them what they could get on the open market. But is that, for that reason, you know, it's still got a couple more rookie years left for Manoah, is he not really involved in that sort of discussion? And if, you know, if we never get to the point where it's like, oh, you have to choose maybe two of the three, or maybe you can only retain one of them, is Manoah kind of separate from those two players?
No, I think that what we do is we carry around a briefcase which has every one of our players and what their salaries will be going forward over the next 5 years. And we think about what our payroll is going to be over the next 5 years. And we think about which players will be included or not included based on current day performance. So you're talking about all your players all the time. But again, when you say lockstep for Vlad and Bo, I would say this. Imagine if they were not Blue Jays and they entered the free agent market at the same time. Would you expect your team to sign both players as free agents?
No.
It would seem crazy, right? Like, you don't see any team go out and take two position players. I mean, you saw the Rangers do it with Seager and Simeon, And then you look back and say, wow, that really, they weren't ready to win. And they got these two players, and now look, they're totally hamstrung with a terrible team. It is not common for teams to do it, which is why the Blue Jays look at Guerrero and Bichette, and they want to delay that decision as long as possible, because it is so unlikely that both will be signed long-term and spend their careers with Toronto. And there's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't mean Toronto's not trying to win. It doesn't mean Shapiro's not good at his job. It means that these are choices that all teams make.
Speaking with David Sampson, former MLB executive, where does Ross Stripling factor into any of this? I know he's free agent this postseason. He's really come into his own this year and stepped into a very significant role for the Blue Jays, which he'll probably be heavily relied on down the stretch. Do you think that there's a world where they can afford to keep a guy that has now blossomed into a pretty hot topic?
So I don't, and here's why. It's very hard to separate emotion, but Stripling's a great example. He's going to take this year and put himself in a class where he believes he should be paid as though he is way better than he is. And there's a temptation to pay him because of what he's done and sort of recency bias of what he's done for you. And, of course, depending on how the Blue Jays season ends, and having them host the wild card round would be great, and that's what they're going for, of course. But you have to be very careful signing players on the high. And, again, I speak from experience over all the years. We signed so many players at the high. It's the worst plan ever. Right, it's like buying your house at the height of the market and then realizing, oh my God, or buying stocks at the high and selling at the low. It's the surest way to get poor. And that's what happens when you sign players after their breakout or seasons, or when there's a disagreement over who they really are. And I think Stripling's a great example where he will come out of this season in theory with an inflated sense that's basically given to him by his agent about what he should get paid. And I think that, again, your front office is too smart to do that.
To continue the payment discussion, no one might get paid like Aaron Judge this offseason. Another two home runs on Sunday, just two back of the Yankee record. I assume the MVP debate is over, but maybe the better question now might be, like, what does the future look like in terms of finances for Aaron Judge after what he did this season?
I've never seen anything like it. He turned down $213 million. He bet on himself, and he got 777, right? So he is having a season for the ages. I'm not willing to let the MVP debate disappear. Last year, when I was talking about Guerrero, I thought Guerrero should be the MVP, because if Ohtani wins it, then he's going to win it every year. How do you not give it to him every year if you give it to him last year? And then this year, he had a better year than last year. Mm-hmm. Ohtani's having a better year than he did last year. Now, I could argue pretty persuasively that Judge is having a better year than Vladdy had last year. But at the same time, I don't know who's more valuable than a number two starter and a top of the lineup power bat. I just don't know how to find that sort of player. But that said, Aaron Judge bet on himself, and the Yankees have a problem because Aaron Judge is going to want to get paid more years than they're comfortable with. And I think that you should look to the Freddie Freeman example, where he wanted more years than the Braves were comfortable with, and it ended up causing a divorce where he ended up in L.A. And I just don't know if the Yankees, who have shown great discipline since George Steinbrenner passed away, whether they're going to be willing to go 8 years for Judge. Remember, he's not a young free agent by any stretch. He's in his 30s already, and that would be the perfect example of signing a player at the high. So whoever signs him just needs to be careful.
What would you do?
I'd sign him.
For how long? And how much?
I would give him 6 years, $300 million. And the reason I would do that is I would give him the most money of any player per year. And right now I think that Scherzer at $43 million. So I'd give him more than that, but I'd give him fewer years than he wanted, because even he turned down 213. He's going to want a three handle for sure. And I'm going to have to give it to him, but I want to do it with fewer years so I can not have that contract on the books 7 years from now.
I'm sold. If he doesn't want it, I'll take it. Okay, David?
Fair enough. You need an agent, though.
Well, you know what? We'll chat. I might need you to help negotiate for me. Thanks, David, for joining us this morning. Really great insight. We'll probably catch up with you postseason and see how everything stands.
Looking forward. Have a great morning. Bye-bye.
David Sampson, former MLB executive, current CBS sports analyst and host of the Nothing Personal podcast. Sounds like there's no Stripling moving forward. That was a day.
Yeah, I mean, I was just about to say I feel better because, like, I agree. I think you got to take advantage of what you have, which is, you know, players that are really, really good playing below what they're probably worth. I think you have to take advantage of that no matter how much friction it may cause. interesting on Manoah, because even stronger, more conviction mm-hmm. in waiting on him when it felt like, hey, maybe this is the guy that you gamble with a little bit.
Well, that's why you talk to the experts, because I was like, get him in the contract tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, I could have had my arm twisted on Manoah, right? Just because you do feel strongly that he can maintain mm-hmm. what he is and even grow some more. But I think, you know, we always understand with Bo and Vlad that there's some risk, because the money is going to be at that upper echelon where it's just like so out of control that it's really hard to live up to. And I think you just delay the inevitable if you're the Blue Jays, as kind of anticlimactic as that mm-hmm. is.
Well, I guess, what is that? Card in hand is...
Bird in hand.
Bird in hand.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not really good at those sayings.
You didn't have your card in hand trying to get in the building today.
I didn't. I was stuck outside the building. You don't even work here and you get in the building easier than I do. I couldn't even get in today. I was almost late for the show. Guys, keep it coming, 590, 590. We have so many great texts in today about the potential Toronto Maple Leafs wanting to change their goal song. So many of those. What you would do if you were planning the NHL All-Star game that needed to include alligators. That's a potential coming up. Because the game is in Florida. If you listen to the first hour of the Fan Morning Show, you can check out. I want to sprinkle in a few before we take a break and talk to Ross Tucker. Line and sinker, Billy Talent. Obviously, this person knows their audience well, because immediate yes for me.
Was that what we came in with? What was the Billy Talent song?
No, it was Red Flag.
Okay.
The red flag that you don't know that, actually.
Well done. Well done. I'll accept that. I'll accept that. That was pretty good.
Nice.
Yeah, I think it's just, what did we start this conversation with? Austin Matthews wanting a change.
That's right.
Is he going to spring for Billy Talent?
He better.
I just can't see it. I just can't see
that.
I don't know if that's what he
has
in mind.
Talent. Maybe he
I
just,
don't think he does.
Arizona, I don't know if Billy Talent is a high listening ship in
good Canadian
Arizona.
Band from, you know, the early 2000s made its way to Arizona.
I think if he listened to it, he would find a way to appreciate
maybe,
Billy Talent.
Maybe I'm underestimating.
Here's one. Kyle from Markham. It's a good one. My songs Know What You Did in the Dark. Light 'em up, Fall Out Boy. Light 'em up, light 'em up.
That one got a little too commercial for me. That one got a little too commercial. It's kind of like All We Do Is Win or whatever. I keep butchering that.
Yeah. Muse, Uprising at the chorus line. Maybe more for the end of the game when the Leafs win. Sheridan from Cordis.
Now, do you like the post-game celebration song?
What is that one? Again. It's been a while since I heard it.
I can't think of the name.
All I can think of is Hall & Oates now.
Text line will bail me out here.
Yeah.
But it's like a fun, it's kind of Hall & Oates-esque where it's family-friendly and it's good vibes. I bet
I
he wants to change that too. The... Yes.
Oh, yeah. And it's all right. That one.
Yes.
I would rather that type of vibe for after the game.
This
not
is
maybe
good.
When you score. This
sounds
this is perfect.
It is perfect for that post-game vibe. But I'm sure the players don't love this either.
How about Gloria, sung by Brett Hull? Mark from Oshawa texted in.
Glory, Gloria.
That's good.
It's St. Louis Blues property, though.
Alex from Hamilton, Linkin Park, Bleed It Out.
Come on.
What? You don't like
Bleed
that?
Bleed It Out can't be the song.
Rock and Roll, Gary Glitter. You think that's Gary's last name?
I think Gary Glitter is a... I don't know.
Okay, Rock and Roll. That's a good one. This Can Be Anywhere in the World, Alexis on Fire. There's some more Canadian energy in the text line.
I think it's got to be that early 2000s punk.
Seriously, that's what our listenership is, at least.
Yeah. I think Sum 41 might have actually a better option too. Mm-hmm. I think they've got a couple that could play.
House of Pain, Jump Around, Chris from Milton.
It's a good song. Good college football. I think, I don't know if it's Wisconsin, but one team does that song really, really well during a stoppage, fourth quarter. Mm. Everyone's jumping, obviously.
Keep them coming, 590, 590.
Keep workshopping it.
Seems like we have about less than a week to figure that out, though.
Yeah.
Saturday doubleheader.
There's a department at the Maple Leaf front office scrambling right now after Austin Matthews.
Shoot, he said he wanted to change it.
Tim and Friends appearance.
Okay, keep them coming, 590, 590. Maybe they're listening. Maybe they'll take advice from you. You never know. Ross Tucker after the break. Week two. Yesterday was a game full of comebacks, a day full of comebacks. Hopefully you were able to cash in on some of that. If not, the Wake and Rake follows that. But that's Ross Tucker. Ross Tucker after the break on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.